Hey guys, welcome back to Making a Dietitian. I'm Cassie Blanford, and today we will be covering our last episode of Life Cycle Nutrition. So today we're going to be discussing nutrition requirements for adults and older adults. At this point in life, the main goal is to maintain a healthy body composition because energy needs aren't going to be increased because you're done growing. Also, if you can hear a dog barking in the background, I am like home, so there's a lot of noise going around. Healthy People 2020 determined that there are five main factors determining health. They are as follows: economic stability, education, health and healthcare, neighborhood and built environment, and then finally, social and community context. If you look at those and you also look at the blue zones, which is something that I briefly discussed on, during my interview with Dr. Lauren Robertson, you can see that a lot of those kind of go hand in hand, and they have been studied extensively. And you can see that all of those factors, as long as they are positive, play a really big role in health and wellness. So that's like really cool. And you can, also look up a lot about blue zones. I know there's like a whole website. Again, we talked about it in the interview, so you can go back and listen to that because I know it's kind of briefly discussed, but it's a really, really cool topic to talk about. So, adult is described as the ages between 21 and 64 years old. During this age, you're going to notice a lot of physiological changes that are going to affect your diet. So, first, bone mass is going to start developing or going to stop developing at the age of 30. So, throughout your 20s, you should be consuming adequate amounts of calcium and vitamin D, as well as participating in weight-bearing exercises to grow your bone density and prevent the development of osteopenia and osteoporosis. I know a lot of people hate on weightlifting. Some people just like love to do cardio. But if you're looking at long term, I mean, you should be doing both, honestly. Always. You should be doing both, which I hate cardio. So there's that. But yeah, weight-bearing exercises are going to be great at helping, develop those bones and help them get denser so that whenever you stop growing bone mass and start losing it, you aren't going to be developing these diseases. So, muscular strength is going to peak around the ages of 25 to 30, depending on the amount and type of exercise you've been participating in leading up to that age, as well as after that age. I mean, I see people at the gym who are like 40 and they're killing it with their muscles. So, like, go you. Obviously, it just depends on your lifestyle that you're leading, but typically, it's going to be around the ages of 25 to 30 that you're going to have like the most muscle mass. So, also during this age, any positive energy balance is going to lead to weight gain and storage in your adipose tissue. Likely, it's not going to start in your central abdominal space, but eventually, if you begin to store enough, it's going to end up there and also going to start adding fat to your organs, putting you at risk for inflammation and metabolic disturbances, leading to chronic diseases. That is why you don't want to be over consuming. You're done growing. We've covered that. You are just kind of in this like maintenance period. And if you're over consuming calories, but you're not, you don't have any output, you're not doing physical exercise or enough physical exercise or, anything like that, your body is only going to use up so much. So it's going to be stored because that's what your body does. In times of crises, it's gonna, take from those stores. But if you're continuously eating that much over time, you're just gonna be storing more and more of that. And it's gonna have to go somewhere. It's not gonna start in your abdominal space, but it will end up there. And fat that accumulates in your abdominal space is going to lead to other health conditions. It's shown to have an increased risk for developing type 2 diabetes and heart conditions, a whole handful of things. So it's really, really important that you aren't consuming at a positive energy balance. You really do want to make sure that you're consuming what you need, and that's that. And of course, like, I'm not saying that, once a week or something, you accidentally consume too much, or you go out and you have a big day and you're out to eat all day, and or you're traveling, something like that. That is not the same as continuously overeating. So there is a really big difference between, you know, that continuous overeating and those, you know, few occasions where you consume a ton of calories. Your body can handle that, no problem. It's built for that, honestly. But it's the point where you are just like keep doing it over and over again. Like you get in the habit where you're consuming 3,000 something calories a day and you only need like 1,800 or something. Yeah, it's gonna end up being a big problem. And if it's 3,000 calories, it's probably gonna happen sooner than later. So, all that being said, there are six stages of nutritional health that we can use to describe an individual's metabolic, physiological, and functional status. So starting off, you're going to have the resilient and healthy group. Individuals are going to be in homeostasis. They're able to defend against injury, and they should have dietary guidance to support adequate intake and anticipate risks. If you're at the healthy and resilient stage, following like the MyPlate diet or, you know, something along those lines that's healthy and balanced, you're fine. You're great. You're doing great. Your body's healthy. It is able to defend itself if anything happens. You're good. So next, we have the altered substrate availability. This is when the individual has a reduction of nutrient stores or an accumulation of excess. So, you know, you have a vitamin D deficiency or you have a vitamin A toxicity, something like that. Your body's just like, you know, it's like, oh, this isn't great. Of course, I said that in micronutrients, but it can obviously also be in macronutrients. So you're not in, you know, you're not taking in enough protein. Like, and we've talked about, it says reduction of nutrient stores. We don't store protein the same way, but you know, fat, anything like that. It could be a micro, it could be a macro, it doesn't matter. Your body is still going to be like, ooh, this isn't right. So at this point, we are going to offer dietary guidance. That's including education to inform about risks and also encouraging healthy eating and lifestyle choices. So next, we move on to non-specific signs and symptoms. An individual has metabolic and physiologic alterations that are observable. You can see them. If you have a micronutrient deficiency and you're giving a nutrition-focused physical exam, it's going to be those signs and symptoms that you can see. So pallor, weird eye colors, you know, where it's like bright red under your eyelids, where your gums are a wrong color, or your tongue is bright red. Those all describe different micronutrient deficiencies, but, you know, that's what I'm talking about with signs and symptoms. So at this point, the individual should have nutrition education and counseling to reduce or reverse specific risk factors. At this point, for most things, I would say, you know, like you're able to reduce those, especially if you're healthy, like you were a healthy individual, you're probably going to be able to bounce back from this for the most part. On the other hand, if you are, you know, have a habit of not being the healthiest individual, it might be a little more difficult for you to bounce back from these because you have other conditions that are affecting your ability to bounce back. But hopefully, depending on what it is, you are able to, you know, reverse what has been going on. So next we have clinical condition. So there's an evident illness and medical diagnosis. This individual should receive intensive medical nutrition therapy or therapeutic lifestyle change program to delay progression. So at this point, we're probably, I would say something like, oh, they have high blood glucose. And that would be like their medical diagnosis is high blood glucose. Or, yeah. So that sucks. And they're going to be receiving intensive medical nutrition therapy, where we as dietitians come in and we do more of a treatment type than a preventative type of care because, you know, they're already showing they have a condition, they've been diagnosed. So we have to move from preventative to treatment, which is really unfortunate. And I've said multiple times, I really hope that we can get to a point where we're preventing more than we are treating. And, you know, this is a really big part of it. So moving on, then we go into chronic condition. At this point, they have an altered metabolism and structural changes and tissues become permanent. I know I'm going along kind of like with diabetes if it's type 2 diabetes, it's not 100% permanent. Like, type 2 diabetes is reversible, but they do have an altered metabolism. Their body isn't going to be metabolizing sugars the way that it should be. So the structural changes in tissues, they're not going to be recognizing the insulin that their body's producing anymore. So that is, a structural change that we're noticing. So at this point, again, we're going to be doing medical nutrition therapy, and the patient should receive education to enable self-management to prevent complications. Going along with type 2 diabetes, we would be teaching carb counting and also when and how to take insulin so that they're able to self-manage so that complications don't further into neuropathy or, you know, anything like that. Retinopathy, I'm pretty sure, is the right term for, like, eyesight. So that's kind of like where we're going with that. I know, again, I said like type 2 diabetes can be reversible for the most part. But in terms of like, it is a chronic condition. So we are going to label it as such. And then finally, terminal illness and death is the last stage of nutritional health. The complications have advanced so much that body systems are shutting down. At this point, the only intervention that we have to offer is comfort care, which is really unfortunate. But again, it's part of, you know, it's part of life, it's part of aging. But for someone who is an adult, but not, you know, an older adult, this is very unfortunate. And that is a whole part of our career and our education is to, you know, work towards preventative measures and treatments that can prevent, you know, early illness and death. So that was kind of sad. So going into the energy needs for adults. So we don't have access to perform indirect calorimetry, which is a mouthful and probably sounds like a big scary thing, but it's basically like, it is the gold standard for how we calculate energy needs. It's pretty expensive. You do it in a hospital. Someone puts a mask on, and as they're breathing, it can tell like how much. I'm pretty sure it's how much heat and like oxygen and water you're giving off through your breath is like able to calculate your, you know, calorie needs, like how much your body is using. But yeah, you can't just do that. You can't just walk into a hospital and be like, hey, you know, set me up. I want to do some indirect calorimetry. No. But if anyone asks, that is the gold standard for estimating energy needs. Outside of that, there are a few ways that we do this in terms of equations. So the most common one used today for individuals who, you know, aren't going into dietetics or they're in the early stages of dietetics, they're going to be doing like the 25 to 30 kcal per kilogram. This is for healthy individuals who have a normal BMI. Which BMI is like a whole thing that we'll talk about because I know it's very controversial. I have an opinion on that too. So I'm sure you'll hear it eventually. But for the most part, yes, if you're a healthy individual who has a healthy BMI or a normal BMI, and you're looking for like weight maintenance, you're going to go for the 25 to 30 calories, kcal per kilogram. If you're going into dietetics, you should really become familiar with the Mifflin-St. George equation. You got to memorize this in your medical nutrition therapy classes. So you should just like memorize it now. It's really easy to look up. I'm going to put it in the show notes so that you guys can see it and be familiar with it. It's really awesome because it takes into account your activity factor as well. So, you know, while the 25 to 30 kcal per kilogram doesn't take into account, you know, energy expenditure through physical activity, so someone who's super active is going to have the same calorie range as someone who is sedentary. The Mifflin-St. George equation is going to change it depending on your physical activity level, which is very, very helpful. So also, if you're attempting to lose weight, I will have an episode coming up about like weight loss and kind of how that works. Again, like all these episodes are pretty basic. It's not like I'm going into super hardcore detail, but I will be discussing it more in that episode. So it's going to be coming up in a few weeks. You'll hear me talk about it. So yeah, just look for that. So as for macronutrient intake, we're going to keep those same percentages of calories. So, fat intake, 20 to 35% of your calories per day. Protein is 10 to 35% of your calories per day. And carbs is 45 to 65% of your calories per day. If you don't remember how to calculate that, I go over it in the macros episode. And also, as a side note, increase your fiber. Just do it. Adults almost never consume enough fiber, and that really sucks. There's a ton of benefits, including weight loss, regular bowel movement, and it improves your gut microbiome for a healthy digestive system, which is something we all need. So you should just increase your fiber. A lot of deficiencies that adults maybe have would be vitamin D and calcium, vitamin A, vitamin E, choline, potassium, and magnesium and iron. And then sodium, on the other hand, is one that a lot of times adults are going to be like have an excess in. So, you can go back to the micronutrient podcast for more information on those. I again recommend like making sure that you are consuming those enough in your diet. And if you're not, look into taking a multivitamin. It's kind of a catch-all and it's just really beneficial to your health if you can afford to put that into your diet. So weight gain in later adulthood is to be expected, whether it's from a decreased physical activity or from a slower metabolism. Most people are going to be slowly gaining weight every year. Unfortunately, this is going to be a bit of a faster process for women, especially whenever they start going through menopause, because of lack of estrogen is thought to increase fat accumulation. Regardless, both genders are likely to face an increase in fat accumulation unless there's also an increase in physical activity to fend it off. Weight gain is totally normal. It's to be expected. We're going to talk about weight gain in the older adult section of this podcast anyway. And it's necessary. It's necessary for our bodies to have an increased amount of fat to protect ourselves. So whenever you start seeing those changes in your body, you don't need to be, self-conscious about it. You don't need to be worried. It is totally normal and to be expected. And it's just part of life. So some basic dietary recommendations for adults include obviously consume more fruits and veggies. Duh. It's where you're gonna get all those micronutrients that you need that you're likely deficient in. Also reduce your refined carb intake, so your white breads, your white pastas, everything like that that really doesn't have a whole lot of nutritional value, except for your it has those B vitamins that are put into them, but besides that, like it's just gonna increase your blood sugar a lot faster than it should. Avoid trans fats and saturated fats when possible. Cook with, olive oil. Olive oil is so good for you. Canola oil, stuff like that. Choose your lean meats, fish, and poultry over your fatty or red meats. Choose nutrient-rich foods, which is most often going to be your fruits and veggies. Limit your sugar intake. Your beverages are going to have a lot of hidden sugars, especially if you're drinking, juices or colas or anything like that. Keep your sodium low. I'm pretty sure it's like one serving of table salt has like all the sodium you need for one day. It's something like that. Also pickles. Pickles have a lot of sodium, which I love pickles. Not gonna say I don't. Sometimes I'm pretty sure it's like one whole pickle. It has like all the sodium you need for a day or something like absolutely ridiculous. So just like be mindful of that. Also, exercise and then balance your intake and your outputs. Whether that looks like increasing your physical activity, maybe decreasing your intake as you're getting older a little bit, anything like that is awesome. So onto water, there's gonna be two different equations for water intake. One is gonna be more conservative for those who are older or have kidney and heart issues. But basically, the adequate intake for men is gonna be 3.7 liters or 125 fluid ounces per day. And the adequate intake for women is gonna be 2.7 liters or about 91 fluid ounces per day. So next on to caffeine. So anything with caffeine in it, tea, coffee, whatever, doesn't really count as fluid intake because the caffeine acts as a diuretic. Okay, sorry about that. I am home, so there's a lot more distractions going on than usual. Like I said, caffeine is a diuretic. It's gonna cause you to pee more often, and you're gonna be losing any fluid intake that you've had throughout the day. A fun fact about coffee is that whether it's decaf or regular, it's gonna have anti-carcinogenic, antimicrobial, neuroprotective, and hypoglycemic effects on the body that may protect an individual from cancer, dental caries, Parkinson's disease, diabetes, and weight gain. That's not to say you need to go guzzle coffee or anything. You're still gonna see that like increase in heart rate and blood pressure whenever you are increasing your intake of caffeine. But there are some very good properties of coffee. So on to alcohol. Alcohol does have pros to it. It is recognized as being heart healthy. I know I talked a little bit about the blue zones earlier this, episode. Coffee, oh my gosh, coffee. Alcohol, especially red wine, is seen to be very good for you. And it's recommended to drink one glass of red wine per night. Especially in like these blue zone areas where you're seeing these people live such healthy lives and living for an extended amount of time, it's a staple. So, you do still want to make sure that you are consuming alcohol in moderate amounts, especially in early adulthood. That's not really common. If you're gonna drink alcohol, you're gonna drink alcohol. Because thing is, in large amounts, alcohol increases the risk for multiple forms of cancer as well as, an alcohol addiction. As sad as it is, we recommend only having one drink per night. This could be seen as a small glass of wine or one beer. I think for men, it may be increased to two beers. I think that might have changed recently. I'm not 100% sure, but it's around there. It's not like a ton. On the other hand, binge drinking or saving up all your drinks for one day of the week is not the same thing as having one drink per night. I know in college, I mean, I literally just graduated college, so I'm fully aware that that's not how it works. And luckily, as we're young, our bodies can really bounce back from that. But over time, if you continue doing this, you are putting a ton of stress on your body, and it's really not a great idea. I'm not gonna act like I didn't do that because I definitely did. Definitely went out, on the weekends and drank way too much. And, I can tell you right now, I've quite a few times where I regretted that. But just be mindful of what you're drinking. And also, alcohol has a ton of just like calories. Like, it's just calories you're drinking without any nutrient. You're getting in return for that. So that's another thing. That's another con, especially if you're looking for like some sort of weight loss. But that's all I have for adult nutrition. So we're gonna move on to older adult nutrition. So this is gonna be described beginning anywhere from about 60 to 68, depending on who you ask or survey. Obviously, if you ask someone who's 60, when do you think older adult nutrition begins? They're gonna say something like 70. But if you ask someone who's 30, they're gonna say 55 or something like that. So anywhere from 60 to 68 is where we're gonna begin seeing these changes. As for really how to live a healthy life, and to end up at this age, we're constantly searching for superfoods and magic fixes that are gonna maintain our vitality. But honestly, a balanced, varied diet is the best way to ensure that you're growing and getting to an optimal nutrient levels throughout your body to boost immunity and provide disease resistance. So, yeah, people who are like, oh my gosh, we have the magic cure for this, or the superfood is what's gonna help you live and it be ageless. No, that's not how food works. There are some foods, obviously, that have more nutritional value than others, but in reality, a balanced diet is how you're going to get all the nutrients that you need, how you're going to stay healthy, and how you're going to be preparing your body for whenever you're at a point where it's slowly declining, because we all end up there. We all get there, some of us sooner than others, and your diet is a huge part of that. But I mean, like, seriously, about 50% of your longevity depends on lifestyle factors. So you could be like, oh, I just have really good genetics, or oh, you know, my environment was super awesome. But like, the decisions you make throughout life regarding physical activity and diet are, you know, and the stress that you're putting on your body, 50% if, you know, is, that's how much of that is going to go into your longevity. So that's a huge amount. It's a lot. So you have to be really mindful of the decisions you're making now to see how you end up in the future. Yeah, sorry about that. Little rant, kind of scary, but it happens to everyone. So something really important to note at this age is that the percentage of lean body mass or muscle is declining starting at the age of 30 and going until death, which is terrifying. 30, you're gonna peak at 30. Whew. At the same time, you're also gaining body fat, and this is gonna be increasing slowly. So you're gonna have shifts in fat placement throughout your body. And I know we kind of just discussed that, like, you know, you are obviously going to be seeing changes in your body, especially in fat accumulation. It's pretty startling to some people who have lived a very lean life, but it's totally normal and it's to be expected. And the increase in fat is good. Like I said earlier, your body's going to be using this as energy stores whenever you have like a low intake, or whenever you are suffering from some sort of disease and your body just needs a little extra. It's going to be protection against falls. You know, you're at a super high increased risk of falls at this age. Especially, you know, you're decreasing your muscle mass. Your bones are getting a little more brittle. So if you fall, you need something to cushion you so you're not hurting yourself even more. And then also, it's insulation against cold weather because you're losing that muscle mass. You need something to make sure you stay warm. Yeah. It's really, I mean, this is why fat is good for you. But unfortunately, after the age of 70, weight begins to decrease overall, and both those fat and muscle stores are going to decrease. Fortunately, training and weight-bearing exercises may increase fat-free mass, decrease fat mass, and increase water stores. I know my Nana personally goes and exercises. I mean, like, not right now because we're in the middle of a pandemic, but before that, she went and exercised and did group fitness classes at our local YMCA, and she loved it. So, I mean, there's definitely a ton of options for you. So, estimated energy needs for older adults are as follows. Males are going to need about 2,000 calories per day, and females are going to need about 1,600 calories per day. Obviously, as with everything, it's going to be varied depending on weight, physical activity levels, and if the individual has an illness or chronic disease that would increase their energy needs. Everyone's going to be different. We're all different. I'm 22 and I don't need the same amount of calories as my roommates who are also all 22, and it's going to be the same when I'm 70. So, you know, don't base your needs off of someone else. As for your macros, the same rule applies in terms of percentages that we just talked about. And then the only macros that most older adults have an issue meeting is going to be protein. It's going to be common for those who are living alone, living in poverty, suffering from obesity, or have functional limitations that may lead to, you know, muscle wasting, weak bones, and weakened immune system, and delayed wound healing, which is really scary at this point because, like I said, you're at an increased risk of falls. And if you fall, you have a wound. And if you don't have enough protein intake, or going back, you know, you have a fall and you have a wound. So now you have a functional limitation and you can't walk as well. So now you're not going to be able to get enough protein because you can't get around and fix yourself food as easily. So then it's going to take even longer for that wound to heal. It's very cyclic. So it's really important to have a support system, especially around this age, to make sure that you are able to get what you need, and make sure that you're safe. So, also at this age, fluid intake should be at 1 milliliter per calorie consumed daily. So if you're consuming 2,000 calories a day, you should be consuming 2,000 milliliters a day. It should be exactly like that. As for micros, the following ones are concerns for older adults due to age-associated metabolic changes or low dietary intake. That's going to be vitamin A, vitamin D, and calciferol, vitamin E, vitamin K, vitamin B12, folate, iron, calcium, magnesium, and potassium. So all of those are going to be things that you are at an increase for deficiencies. Of course, you can always, get that checked out. Again, multivitamins are great, and they do offer specific ones for like specific age groups. So I'm pretty sure they do offer multivitamins that are targeted specifically for those who are older adults. But yeah, I think it's like women's, above 50, men's above 50. So those are always really good things that you can always check out. I know this one was kind of a shorter one. Everything is pretty self-explanatory, especially since there aren't a ton of changes between older adult and adult nutrition. But this, I'm gonna go through the key points, but after this, it really sums up our life cycles session, and that's really exciting. So the key points from this episode are: one, there are significant disparities across population groups and prevalence of disease across populations. Social and economic disadvantages, along with other factors, are important determinants of nutritional health and outcomes. Two, metabolic rate and energy expenditure decline through adult years. Balancing energy intake and physical activity is necessary to maintain a healthy body weight. Three, risk nutrient for adults include excessive saturated fat and sodium intake, an inadequate intake of several vitamins, minerals, and fiber with important metabolic consequences. Four, of all the physiological changes associated with aging, loss of lean body mass and the gaining of body fat may well be the most important in determining functional age. Five, it is important to use both your body and mind as you age to ensure you maintain acute brain function, stay active to build muscle and bone, eat well to maintain and repair tissues, and cultivate a positive approach to life to improve longevity. And then six, vitamin and mineral supplements can be helpful for older adults who have lost their appetite, avoid certain food groups, have poor diets, or have gastrointestinal bacterial overgrowth that prevent nutritional absorption. So that really sums up our whole life cycle section. And I want to remind everyone that I personally used the book Nutrition Through the Life Cycle, Sixth Edition by Judith E. Brown for almost all of my information. It is what I had to use for this class, so you may very well have to do the same. But after this, we'll be moving into more fun topics. I know the next one is going to be on mental health and diet, so stay tuned for that. Thank you.